this meeting of the San Diego Union High School District Board to order and welcome you all here and ask Ms. Schultz to read our meeting protocol, please.
Okay. Welcome to the meeting of the San Diego Union High School District Board of Trustees. If you wish to speak to an item on the agenda, please complete a speaker slip located at the sign-in desk and present it to the secretary to the board prior to the start of the meeting. When the board president invites you to the podium, please state your name before making your presentation. Persons wishing to address the board on any school-related issue not elsewhere on the agenda are invited to do so under the public comments item. If you wish to speak under public comments, please follow the same directions for speaking to agenda items. In the interest of time and order, presentations from the public are limited to 3 minutes per person per topic. The total time for agenda and non-agenda items shall not exceed 20 minutes. An individual speaker's allotted time may not be increased by a donation of time from others in attendance. In accordance with the Brown Act, unless placed on the published agenda, no action shall be taken by the board on non-agenda items. However, the board may, 1, acknowledge receipt of the information, 2, refer the matter to staff for further study, or 3, refer the matter to a future agenda. In compliance with Government Code Section 54957.5, agenda-related documents that have been distributed to the board less than 72 hours prior to the board meeting have been available for review on the district website or at the district office. All matters listed under consent are those in which the board has previously deliberated or which can be classified as routine items of business. An administrative recommendation on each item is contained in the agenda supplements. There will be no separate discussion of these items prior to the time the Board of Trustees votes on the motion unless members of the board, staff, or public request specific items to be discussed or pulled from the consent items. To address an item on the consent calendar, please follow the procedure described under comments on agenda items. As a courtesy to all meeting attendees, please set cell phones and electronic devices to silent mode and engage in conversations outside the meeting room. Thank you.
Thank you. And if I could ask you all to please stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Right. The board has previously met in closed session this evening, and we have some action that was taken in closed session. The board unanimously ratified the voluntary resignation agreement of employee ID number 136570. And then we need to take action on a student discipline case, which is our case number 2017-064-SD. It's an expulsion, and I need a motion to approve the expulsion of case number 2018-064-SD for violation of California Ed Code Sections 48900A1, and it's for the period of January 19, 2018 through January 19, 2019. I have a motion.
So moved.
Thank you.
Second.
Thank you. We need a roll call, please, Ms. Schultz.
Ms. Herman?
Yes.
Mr. Salazar?
Yes.
Ms. Muir?
Yes.
Ms. Hergesheimer?
Yes. Thank you. And while I'm thinking of it, we are missing one board member this evening. Ms. Del Sandro's got family illness and needed to be in her home this evening. So we will conduct business with four of us on hand. We have a quorum here, so. That brings us to our regular meeting items. First of all, we need an approval of our agenda. So I need a motion to approve the agenda for January 18th regular board meeting as presented.
We do have the two speakers. Excuse me. 11A and 11B.
Thank you. But do we go ahead? Oh, do we need to pull any checkers?
Our poll.
You know what? Excuse me. Do we need to accept our
No, first it's the agenda, yes, on item 5.
So let's see if I can do this right.
Any other items to be pulled? We have speaker slips. We have two speaker slips on 11A and 11B.
And I had not heard of any items that needed to be pulled otherwise. No. So is there anything? So we will start with the speaker slips then.
The agenda.
Can we approve the agenda?
That's what I was going to do, and then I got thrown here. So, okay, can I have a motion to approve items 5 through?
Approving the agenda.
I'm so
items
sorry.
11A and 11B removed from the consent agenda.
So moved.
Thank you. Thank you.
Second.
Thank you. And all in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. It's been a while. And that brings us to the approval of our minutes here. And I have a motion to approve our December 14th, 2017 regular meeting notes.
So moved.
Second.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. And second is seventh is our appointment of board representatives to committees. And I sent a message out. I know it was a little late in our cycle here, but I think what I'll do is read through what we have had, and unless I hear anything differently, we will continue to move forward with all this, maintaining those assignments. So for Career Technical Education, it has been Maureen Muir and John Salazar. For our Encinitas City School Liaison Committee, it has been Joyce D'Alessandro and myself. The Legislative Action Network has been myself and Amy Herman. The North Coastal Consortium for Special Ed has been Mo Muir. And the Solana Beach City School Liaison Committee has been Joyce D'Alessandro and Amy Herman. So I'd like to, I'm proposing that we retain all of those same names.
Move approval.
Thank you.
Second.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Hearing no other discussion on that, we will get all those names in print.
Are we going to the
non-action?
Now adjourned to the facilities.
Thank you. I have the gavel.
Financing authority.
All right. So I am now adjourning us from our regular meeting for the moment and calling us to our special meeting, or a meeting of the San Dieguito School Facilities Financing Authority. And I will ask Mr. Dill to.
Certainly. We have two facilities financing authorities. And this is the new one that we set up, which has a bylaw that requires quarterly meetings. The other one, we conduct business as needed. So this will be a regular quarterly update. If we have no other business, it'll be an update. But if we do have business in issuing future debt, we will also conduct it during these quarterly meetings. So you just go through the normal agenda, and Ms. Douglas will have an update on, I think, item 4.
All right. So let's see. We have no public comments on this item.
Correct.
So we just need to approve the agenda.
Can I have a comment?
Approve the minutes. Thank you. Can I have a motion to approve the minutes from that last?
So moved.
Thank you.
Second.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. That carries. And you've kind of given us our.
Well, Ms. Douglas needs to give them up.
Okay. Thank you. I'll get there.
So at the last board meeting, December 14th, we provided an update with similar information. Only a couple of revisions have changed since then. We had some surplus dollars left over from the Pacific Trails Middle School Building B and Canyon Crest Academy Building B, and this would be reallocating those surplus dollars to other projects, Torrey Pines, the PAC, and Earl Warren Middle School for perimeter security. So that's the only change from the report that was given last month.
Okay. Any questions for her while we're in this session? All right, then I will close that special or less meeting and bring us back into our regular meeting. And that brings us to item 8, which is our reports and updates. And I understand a lot of you are kind of going in here with finals week and so forth. So if you feel you need to leave at some point during the meeting, we certainly understand if you want to slip out at some point. Let's start with Scott Geyer giving us a report from Acosta Canyon.
Thank you. So from Acosta Canyon, we did our middle school visit to Oakcrest. We gave Ms. Glick a presentation on how high school selection works and just kind of like ran through everything. And then ASVN administration has been like kind of teaming up, and we've been giving tours during school hours and after school. And I was at a tour last week, and we had around like 250 people, so we're having a really good outcome, so we're proud of that. And then, as she said, we have finals next week, so it's a little bit stressful, but also a little bit less stressful than normal, because now they've actually changed the schedule, so like we're going to have English and history on Monday and Tuesday, period 7 on Wednesday, and then math and physics finals on Friday, so instead of having a bunch of finals on one day, depending on how your schedule works out, it's kind of like guaranteed that you're not going to have them all on the same day, so that's a cool change. And then for our like theater section, our theater department put on the Love of Three Oranges about a month ago, and then they won the best play in San Diego by the California Education Theater Association, which like they're known as CETA. They kind of like award groups for like special performances and things. So last weekend they went to LA. They brought like the entire crew, a bunch of technical support, stagehand classes up to LA to perform in front of an audience of around 1,600 people. And obviously, like, the CETA grand jury who, like, decides basically, like, awards and winners and things. And the casting crew received many awards, including Outstanding Main Stage Technical Achievement given to Connor Fine, and he's in class of 2018. So, like, we can just tell definitely that our theater department's on the rise and making, like, major improvements, like, the whole program, thanks to our teacher, Brad Golden. And then in other theater news, they're holding auditions for their next play, which is Les Mis. So that's going to be more towards the end of the year. And then there's an IB informational night held on January 24th. And then, like, the IB program at LCC is really getting a lot of attention from the community and especially, like, the incoming freshman class. So there's a bunch of people at our school site working on that. And then for sports, the Lady Mavericks basketball team is off to a great start this season, and they were featured in the Delmar Times article. And then ASB is planning our, like, yearly info night, and it's for our middle school students, like basically making their high school selection. So they're going to come to our school at February 6th at 5:30 and just kind of get like general information about our school, and then they get to make their high school selection. And then finally, the Maverick community is coming together to support a fellow student at LCC who was recently diagnosed with an aggressive brain tumor. She was, as she's like an avid surfer herself, there's a surf competition at Moonlight on this Saturday at 7:30 in the morning. And then later that day, there's like a fundraising event at Park 101 in Carlsbad. And if anyone's interested in going to that or like just like supporting her, there's more information at purepipe.org.
All right. Thank you very much. And Isaac Gilman for Torrey Pines, please.
Okay, so I have a few things that I saw in the news. Torrey Pines High School alum John Lynch was among the 15 modern era finalists for the Pro Football Hall of Fame announced Tuesday. I wish I knew more about football than that. further in sports, the class of 2017 soccer freshman now at Stanford, Kat Macario, was named National Women's Player of the Year by ESPNW.
Wow.
It's also very exciting. We had Jaden Whitmarsh in the news, who's a senior right now, as San Diego Player of the Year for girls volleyball, and she was she's also on the CIF. She's a CIF first team athlete. Sorry, and 10 other students are also CIF first or second team athletes this for fall CIF sports. we're the league champs for the Avocado West League in field hockey, girls golf, girls tennis, and girls volleyball, and we're CIF champions in girls tennis and girls volleyball. Was a heartbreaking game, but we did make it to the finals. It was at TV. It was a great game. Tomorrow we have a basketball game versus CCA at TP. I just thought the theme was funny. We're calling it Silent Night, where all the inspired by they do this at a university, at Taylor University. They're silent for the first 10. The crowd is silent for the first 10 points. And then when we make our 10th points, everyone erupts in the crowd. So I hope it's going to be fun. I hope it works out. It's going to take some coordination, though. For the arts, we have a new sitcom by the advanced TV production class called At Break. They have 5 episodes on YouTube now. I watched them today. They're They're really funny. I recommend you check them out.
How do you find it?
It's called At Break, like just the at symbol and then break. Just search it on YouTube.
Okay.
For music, we have a winter concert coming up February 26th and 27th. That's at CCA. We have a play opening February 21st called Leader of the Pack. We had five students, along with myself, go to a joint mathematics meeting last Thursday. It was really fun. We went with Ms. Brown and got to experience higher math, and there's a bunch of presentations that I didn't really understand. But it seems to be a theme in mathematics for me. But it was fun, and one thing we got involved in was called the Estimathon, where it was hosted actually by a hedge fund there. And basically you have to estimate things like, one of the questions was how many cast and crew are listed on the IMDb page for the new Last Jedi, and it turns out to be way higher than you expect. It's 1,900 people. So basically, you were just like trying to guess stuff, and there's a bunch of fun things like that. It was a great experience, and hopefully, whenever it's San Diego, more Torrey Pines kids get to go. Also, in math, we had a math competition hosted last night, actually, for middle school kids that are interested in competition math. Mm-hmm. And so that was hosted by Ms. Brown and some of our superstar math club kids. And Kevin Wren, if you guys know the name, he's a senior, and he just won the Siemens competition, national top prize. So they won $25,000, Jack, I'm sure he's going to talk about it, because two of the people on his team are from CCA. So it's him and two CCA kids. So, very proud of him. We have Info Night coming up on February 8th. Mm-hmm. And this is so much. We had the canned food drive in December, and we almost got 10,000 pounds of food this year. I think this is a triple of what we had last year, and that makes 8,000 meals for the canned food drive. So that, we're very proud of that. And other than that, we have Powder Puff coming up, which is football girl version. So that'll be fun. And we have Stress Relief Week. We have a bunch of events on campus for that next week. That's all I have.
All right. Thank you very much. Gonzalez is going to be giving us his last report from San Dieguito, and I believe introducing
again.
Thank you.
It's going to be hard to beat all that stuff, but SDA, right now we've been running tours to show the 8th graders the school and try to get them to make the choice to come to SDA. And we recently hosted a suicide prevention workshop it was online, it was a webinar online, and the link is still on our website if you want to go check it out and see all the information that was presented there. Our winter sports have gone full swing. It's going well right now. Girls basketball is doing pretty well, and that's a lot of fun right now. And we also have a charity operating on school called My Girlfriend's Closet, and it's an organization that gets girls' clothes. It collects girls' clothes for the girls between ages 12 to 21, and so we're basically exchanging candy in for old clothes that no longer fit but are still pretty nice. And we've gotten a lot of those. That's been going on for the past two lunches, and I'm pretty sure it's all done. We've got a lot of clothes, but we might have one more day. And what else? We have the winter assembly coming up tomorrow, and that's going to be fun. We're going to have a teacher dance off in front of the school, so we're getting teachers to... We have a long-term sub right now who's a professional break dancer, so it's a night job. It's going to be a lot of fun. Yeah. And he's going to show off his moves there. And we also have had 12th Night, the play, going on right now. And this is its second week. And it's playing actually tonight. And two more, Friday and Saturday night. And Mustang Minds also started up as well. And the tryouts happened for that. We got a varsity team. And all the kids are pretty excited about it. And obviously finals week is coming up. And the quarter's wrapping up. And random acts of kindness, little group in ASB that does little things like puts flowers around school or puts positive messages, and I think they're going to be there to help out all the students in finals week. And because we have the assembly tomorrow, I have to go to the assembly rehearsal tonight, but the next board representative because we're switching over in ASB. Yeah, is Gabby Glenner, and she's super awesome. She's super nice. there's no question when she interviewed that we wanted her to be our representative, and so she's going to be wrapping up for my job tonight, and I'm going to head out after all the reports are given. Thank you.
All right.
I really enjoyed being on panel. Everyone here is awesome. So.
Thanks.
You know, before we get to Jack, since you're going to run off, you know, we always do recognize our outgoing student board representatives with just a small token of our appreciation. I'll say, Cole, we've barely even gotten to know you, but in your short time here on the board, you've definitely made your mark. And you know, from the first meeting, you made some really impactful comments and have continued to do that. And we've really appreciated your time here on the board.
Thank you.
So thank you, Cole.
I enjoyed it all.
Thank you.
Great.
Which brings us to our.
Jack Hart
is here. Please, would you
be able to All right, so CCA Winter Sports have been off to a great start, and as Isaac mentioned, we have four big games tomorrow, all versus Fort Hunts. We have, starting with girls soccer at 3 o'clock at CCA, and we have girls basketball at 5:30, boys soccer at 6, and boys basketball at 7, all at Torrey Pines. We're also having a really big event at the girls soccer game, that's been promoted heavily by all the teachers around campus to get people to come to all the games that night, but especially the women's soccer game, trying to spark our Raven Nation. Before the break, we finished our canned food drive, where we collected a record-breaking number of cans for our school. And then we also had a week-long dodgeball tournament. On the last day of break, right as the bell was ringing to get out to break, our entire band came down, and they were like all through like the halls, upstairs and stuff, and down the quad. They started playing holiday tunes to get everyone in the spirit for the holidays, and that was really, really cool. Coming back from break, we had a couple events where students wrote New Year's resolutions and posted them on a board for donuts, and we had those boards up for a few weeks. And our AP World History and Japanese World Language students took a trip to Little Tokyo, and I heard it was an unforgettable experience for the people who went there. Also, this week we held a week-long Pictionary tournament for all our clubs. That was really fun to watch. And this past Saturday we had our winter formal at the zoo, which was a huge success. The zoo was a really, really neat venue. We had like the Skyfari, they had a bunch of exhibits open, and then the dance floor was also really cool, and people seemed to really enjoy it, so that was awesome. Next week we have our Stress Less Week. Because it's our finals week, so we're going to have like some therapy dogs down there, and it should be pretty fun, besides the finals part of it. But and then lastly, Mr. Clean, our principal, and I, and Mr. Coco, some Torrey Pines representatives, have been going around to the middle schools in the area and talking about our schools as that high school selection window is beginning to approach. And our info night is going to be February 12th.
All right.
Thank you very much. Ms. Herman, if you would.
Okay, not nearly the report. You've heard from the students. Mine's very short. With the break, the only items I have to report are on December 18th, right? In this room, we have the district office potluck, which is always a great time to kind of celebrate the first part of the year and a chance to talk to some of the district employees that we don't always see out of their office. So that was really, really nice. December 19th. Also in this room was the ATP graduation, and this is the second time I've attended one, and this was really well attended. They brought in all the students in the program, and such a nice celebration of those students finishing their program, and they showed videos and celebrated with them with cake and everything, so that was very nice. And then yesterday I attended the Special Ed Task Force. It was at Carmel Valley Middle School, and found it very interesting to see how the group is working together with the staff and parent and input. It was great. Unfortunately, I didn't get to hear as much from the facilitator because she got stuck. Her flight was diverted because of fog, so she did get there. She was just a little bit late, but anyway, Mr. Miller did a great job stepping in and getting the group started, and there was a discussion breakout. So, very interesting to see. That's it.
Thank you, Mr.
Salazar. Mine's even shorter. I have nothing to report.
I went to the ATP graduation too. I thought that was nice. And, you know, like they did the videos and they talked about their life and what they're going to be doing. And I thought it was really moving. I'm glad we went. It was really nice. And, of course, Brad Dalton was there and he's always amazing, you know. As you know, Tuesday night I went to Voices. I was with Scotland and Mr. Etheridge had that class, and it's about kids with depression. And maybe you guys should know this. It's a breakout. You guys can come and talk in a group about things. And I thought it was great because one of the kids was from CCA, and he talked about how it's just something that happens. And it was great because he felt he was telling the kids, you know, that it's just something that happened, and getting into a group and talking about it really helped him. And I was hoping that talking to Judy Strang, maybe get that on the San Diego Alliance, mm-hmm. is they can go to that once a month if they want to drop in and just talk about their feelings, maybe work that out with kids their own age. You know, work through it. I thought that was a really great thing. And let's see. And you did mention the Kira Stanley. If you guys can make it, she has brain cancer. I'll be there. My son Scotland's volunteering. It'll be at Moonlight Beach from 7:30 to 3:30. Raising money for her, and I also want to congratulate everybody and their parents and kids because they got to know where they were going to college. Isaac, do we know yet or no? So a lot of people I know, and so congratulations. This is really exciting.
All right, thank you. Well, I also, made it to the district potluck, to the adult transition program's graduation, and then I went to the Solana Highlands Elementary School. They had a Prop JJ ribbon cutting for having completed some of the projects, primarily the brand new, very stainless steel kitchen, but awesome, some really neat equipment in there, and neat, good food programs going on, and it was kind of a nice experience to go to an elementary campus and see what was going on there. And then I went Tuesday night to the ICOC, our Independent Citizens Oversight Committee meeting, and sat in on that. Then also went to the morning portion of the Special Ed Task Force at Carmel Valley. And then I would like to just briefly introduce in the audience this evening, we have Raquel Madden, and she's who is called our PACER. She's actually going to speak for a few minutes during our public comment, so I'll let her explain a little bit more. But she's now representing our area through CSBA with connecting us with our legislators. So yeah, thanks for coming. And sitting in, and that brings us to our superintendent's report.
Well, speaking of legislators, this is the time when we focus a lot of attention on what's going on in Sacramento, beginning with last week with the governor's budget proposal that happens at the beginning of January. We did have host our Legislative Action Network meeting here back in November, and so we directly interfaced with Assemblymember Chavez, and we had some other representatives from the local office. But I do maintain that contact, and I'm sorry, this mic is even hotter than I thought. But I do maintain contact regularly with our local elected officials, and I did send them a follow-up letter at the end of December, prior to the governor's budget being released, because the governor's proposal is just that. It's a proposal, and it's the starting point. And if you've read the document, which is over 200 pages, there's a lot of information but not a lot of detail.
Right.
And so often the proposals are just one or two sentences with a dollar amount, and it takes several weeks to months before we get any information as bills are introduced into the legislature on exactly what that would mean. Will we qualify for the funding or not? And is there an alternative proposal that now the legislature and the governor is going to have to bounce back and forth before they finally reach a compromise on a final budget bill? But you know, there's mostly good news in the governor's budget proposal, as expected. He proposes to fully fund the local control funding formula. And while that's good news and it will move some forward funding forward for us that we were anticipating in later years, it still keeps California in the bottom 10 in per student funding compared to other states. So we're nowhere near even the national average. And so when you look at Prop 98, when you look at the LCFF and these kind of COLA-only models that we get, it's not an aspirational target. It just keeps us treading water down here at the very bottom. And so there's going to be, I think, a lot of attention. I know CSBA has put a lot of focus on setting a new target for the local control funding formula, something that's closer to the national average, and map out a strategy to get us there. And that's something that I've had direct conversations with our legislators that we think is a priority. I've also focused on career technical education and providing a stable and predictable funding source for that. The way that we've received CTE funding in the last few years has been grant funding, which expires this year. And I think we've impressed on our legislators that these are expensive and ongoing programs, and because of the way that technology changes, we need to be able to adapt to that as well and invest in CTE as careers that we didn't even imagine 10 years ago emerge in our county and become important industry sectors. And so it was good to see the governor propose an ongoing funding source in his proposal, and then there's also additional support for CTE in the assembly with an assembly bill that was released in advance of the governor's proposal. And then finally, you know, I think of our third priority would be to increase special education funding. And we are, as for those of you who were at the task force meeting when Ms. Douglas went through exactly how much we receive in federal and state funding and the amount of contribution that our general fund provides to the special ed program, we do not receive nearly enough funding to provide the services that are necessary for students. And so that's another high priority to improve and maybe at least equalize funding for special education throughout the state. And it's doled out in a very unequal and disparate way. And I looked at if our SELPA were just at the average, our SELPA would receive another $2.4 million in funding. If we were the same level as San Francisco County, which is not even the highest, it'd be over $15 million for our SELPA. So you can just see the wide range in per-student funding and what that could potentially mean for us. So I think increasing the LCFF target, increase and have an ongoing, stable funding source for CTE and improve special education funding would be my top three if I have to corner a legislator in the elevator. Yeah. Often I do it in the Southwest line in the Sacramento Airport, which I'll be doing next week. Those are my top three. So I think Ms. Douglas will talk a little bit more at the end of the meeting on her impressions of the budget and then our next steps for planning and putting together a budget workshop.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. All right. We brings us to, we have Mr. Rick Ayala here, and he's going to be presenting perhaps with a few hats here.
Hi, thank you, President Herzheimer, board members, student reps, Superintendent Dill. I love to talk about Sunset. I'll try to keep it under 90 minutes. So off to another great start at Sunset. We've got a lot going on. And so I wanted to focus on a couple of the things that we specialize in, credit recovery and student connectedness. But before I get to that, I wanted to just give everybody an overview on why students come to Sunset, what we're about, so that makes it puts it in better context. So we are a continuation school. We don't call ourselves a continuation school. We're Sunset High School. And really all a continuation school is per state ed code, we have different requirements as far as our bell schedule and time requirements. And so we have flexibility in how we set up our schedule. And so that's really what a continuation school is. How each district builds theirs, that's up to them. And so I think sometimes a continuation school, people hear that and something negative comes to mind. But what we're not a dumping ground for kids. We're not a place where kids get shipped off if they've had trouble at other schools. We've gotten to a point where over 95% of our kids every year are there for one of three reasons. Some kids come to us caught up on credits, but they just want to graduate early and they want to speed through classes if they want to put it on work and get it done. And so, for example, last couple of years, about a quarter of our graduates have been early grads. Some kids come to us behind in credits. And we're the best place for kids if they're behind in credits because the format, which I'll explain, gives them the opportunity, if they're willing to work hard, to earn credits at a faster rate than they could at one of the other high schools. And then the third big reason why kids come to us, some kids just don't want to be at a big school. All of our schools are great, very high achieving, very competitive schools. But for some kids, it's just not for them. Maybe they're used to being at a smaller school, middle school, elementary school. So some kids come to us because they like that small feel. You know, we may peak at around 160, 170 kids over the year. So even at our peak, we're a small school. I know all the kids. The teachers know all their kids really well. So that's a big a draw for some of the kids. So those three reasons, that's why kids come to us. It's not because they're getting sent because they got in trouble. They want to be there, okay? So credit recovery, one area we specialize in. Students, they may need to recover credits for different reasons, but they could be behind in total credits, and coming to us, they're going to have an opportunity to speed up that process. And so the way the classes work, when a student starts a class, they're going to get presented with something we call a cover sheet. Their teacher's going to review it with them. It's like a syllabus, but what it does is it outlines all the assignments, all the work, projects, quizzes, tests that they have to do to complete that course. And so they don't get the work all at once. They get it one assignment at a time, but they're dictating how fast they're going. Every kid is working independently. So we're not, I don't like to use the term independent study, because when people hear that, I think they think of online learning where kids are on their own. Our teachers are teaching. And so it's the pacing that's independent. So if I've got 15 kids in a room, 20 kids in a room, and by the way, our classes are smaller than the other high schools, per recommendation of State Board Continuation Schools, each kid is doing his or her own thing. And so each teacher is working with the kids individually, and they're working independently at their own speed. So if one kid can, maybe a kid can get a class done in 6 weeks. Maybe another kid can get it done in 5 weeks, another kid in 7. It's really up to them. And so the teachers will work with them on what's a realistic pace for you. Okay, maybe math isn't your best subject. Maybe it's your best subject. Maybe this kid will take 5 weeks, this kid 7 weeks. They can work with the kid on planning it out, what's going to be best for them. And so they work at their pace. If there are four assignments before the first quiz in a class, if I want to take that quiz on a Wednesday, then I know I got to get those four assignments done by Wednesday. If I get them all done by Tuesday, I can take it on Tuesday. If I needed more help on Wednesday and I pushed it back to the quiz to Thursday, I have that flexibility. So the only person that I'm competing with as a student is myself and my own plan. So if I get a kid next to me who's going, slow, I don't have to wait for that kid. If I get a kid over here going lightning speed, there's no pressure to match that kid. Everybody's got their own plan. And so that's how the classes work. That's how kids can accelerate the process and recover those credits. And so they may come to us behind in credits at the end of a semester, and their plan is to recover credits. Some kids may come to us in the middle of a semester. We can take a kid at any time. And so, for example, let's say a kid's halfway through the semester, and they're bombing all their classes for one reason or another. Maybe a quarter of the way they were doing really well, but something happened, whether it was an attendance issue or illness, something that resulted in their performance going down. They can come to us to salvage those grades. And so since we have the same curriculum, they can take the same course with us, and maybe we go back to that point a quarter through the class, and they can pick up from that point and redo the portion where they weren't doing so hot, so they can salvage their grades. So most of the grades that I sign off on, teachers are signing off on, are A's and B's, because the teachers expect the kids to turn in that level of work. If they turn in something that's subpar, the teacher's going to work with the student on improving that before they move on to the next assignment. And so that's how they can salvage grades, how they can recover credits. Okay. And so what can a kid do? How many classes can a kid finish in a year? It's really up to the kid. If a kid is caught up, the minimum expectation is finish 12 classes every year, 6 every semester. You'll stay caught up. You'll graduate on time. We have kids every year that do more than double that. The most ever has been 33 classes in a year. That was a girl that was eating, drinking, sleeping, breathing school. And so, but it was her goal to get done early, and she did it. But every kid's different. A kid doesn't have to work at that pace if they don't need to. But some kids are going to need to work at a pace where they're going to have to get more than 20 classes done in a year. And they have that option if they're willing to put in the work. And so they dictate the pace. If they're coming to school every day, they're being responsible in class and getting things done, the teachers will work with those students to give them more opportunities outside of school hours to get more work done. And so that's how they can continually speed up that process. And so it's really up to them how many classes they want to get done in a year, and they're going to have more control over it than anywhere else they've been. And if they decide they want to go back to the school they came from, once they're caught up, they can do that. A lot of those kids, if they come to us behind and then they get caught up, they rationalize, why am I going to go back? I've done really well, so I'm just going to stay. And I was telling them, it's like life. If you take care of business, you're going to have options. And so take care of business, we'll cross that bridge when we get there. Okay? And so another piece that we're really big on, we're really proud of what we do, is the student connectedness piece. And so that starts before a kid even starts at Sunset, before they enroll. Any kid, whether they're interested or considering it, you know, or for sure they know they're coming to Sunset, I meet with them and at least one of their parents before they start. We review the program and expectations, but it's really a way to start building that connection between the family and the school. And so we go over everything. And so they have a good idea before they even start what they're looking at and whether or not it's for them. And so there's never any pressure from us. It's totally a family decision on if the student wants to start at Sunset. And so that's the first step. And so once they do enroll with us, we're going to look at their transcript. The student's going to sit down with their counselor, analyze their schedule, their transcript, and build a schedule based on what they need and what their goals are. And so beyond that, it doesn't end there. Every kid is assigned an advisor, a teacher on campus, whose role is to oversee everything that student's doing. So they're overseeing their academics, their attendance. They're helping them with planning and pacing. And so they see their advisor every day because they have to check out with them when they leave. But we have a formal advisory period every Wednesday, period 3. So they're seeing them at least once a week on a formal basis where they can review their progress, see where they're at, and make adjustments if necessary. So that's a big piece of what we do. And each advisor right now at the most may have 15, 16 kids. When we peak, maybe 20 kids. So they know all the kids really well. And so that's on top of our counselor, who's amazing, and all the good work she does with building kids' schedules. But there's a lot of things in place for us to communicate with kids. And so there's not a kid on that campus who doesn't know where they're at, where they're supposed to be, and what the goal is at the end, and if they're making that happen. And so as a staff, we're in tune with each other. We have weekly meetings every Monday after school. We meet. We talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly. We talk about everything. And so it's just a great way for all the teachers to know what's going on with all the kids in different classrooms. Maybe something's happening in one room and something that a teacher did was successful with a kid. That teacher can share that with other teachers so they know what works for that kid and they can try that in their classes. So a lot of communication. And we have regular contact with parents. Our parents know they're welcome to come in and meet with us in person. They can make phone calls. They can send emails. We're going to get back to them right away. And so that's another big piece. We do a lot of activities on campus to build connections. We have support groups. It's not required of kids. It's voluntary, but the majority of our kids do voluntarily participate in a support group. And they're within the schedule, and so the kids aren't having to come early or stay late. Each group meets once a week. They have an hour a week, and it's always led by two staff members. And so our counselor's involved, other teachers involved. I lead a group with our counselor. So it's just a really cool way of making connections with the kids and staff and kids and other kids. And so some of those groups may take on serious conversations. Just depends on what's going on at that time. Some of it may be light. It just, whatever it is, it's another way to bridge that gap and bring kids and staff together. We have a lot of student recognition ceremonies. We love sharing, you know, with the kids and the entire school how everyone's doing. And so we'll recognize kids, and we have some partners in the community that help us with that. We do field trips. I just did a field trip a couple weeks ago. Occupation field trip. We've done law enforcement. We've done contracting. Next month, we're going to do a healthcare field trip at the new Kaiser Hospital. So different things to get kids thinking about what they want to do in the future, looking at different occupations. We have spirit days. Halloween's huge at Sunset. We'll have different dress-up days. So we try to give kids the entire high school experience, different things to have fun and bring them together. We have guest speakers. We've had some pretty influential folks come in and share a message that's positive and inspiring. A couple years ago, we even had Stedman Graham, for those of you who don't know who he is, mm-hmm. Oprah's boyfriend. it's a shame he's known as Oprah's boyfriend. He's actually he's a very accomplished guy. And he had a great message for the kids. And so we'll do things like that. Lots of talks for the kids. You know, it's a small school. We're afforded the opportunity to speak to kids a lot. And so, you know, it's like a family. It really is. And so we see ourselves as staff. We see ourselves as their parents. And sometimes you got to hug them. Sometimes you got to be tough with them. whatever it takes to move the kids forward. And so building on that connection that we try to build amongst the kids and with each other and kids and staff, if you look at the results of the California Healthy Kids Survey every year, it's always very positive when it comes to the connectedness. If you look at things like how they respond to, I feel safe in my school, someone listens when I have something to say, someone at school tells me when I do a good job, teachers at this school treat students fairly, I feel someone at school notices when I'm not there, someone at school always wants me to do my best. We're always in the 90th percentile above that. And so very positive responses from students when it comes to that. And so and some of the comments we've received from kids on the survey, I'm appreciative for all the support Sunset has given me. The teachers are the best. Sunset helped me realize that my future lies in my own hands. I love Sunset, and I wish I didn't have to leave. And so this is my 14th year in the district and my 10th year as principal at Sunset. I love coming to work every day. It's still fun. So thank you to everyone for the support you've given us. It's a great place to be. We love it there. Michelle Horsey's here, and she's been there even longer than I have. And it's a great place. We love it there. So thank you for everything you do to support us in what we do. Sunset rocks.
Questions for Mr. Ayala? So I want to thank Mr. Ayala for that update and the accomplishments, and to you, Ms. Horsley, as well, of Sunset. And I know that from where Sunset was when I started here in this district, what the perception of it was versus what the perception is now. And you've really made sure that the reality of Sunset is how people see that school. So thank you for that work.
Yeah, that's been a big priority coming in. And we've done a lot of outreach with the other sites. And when we get new administrators or counselors to our district, I've gotten a lot of support from the district office on encouraging them to, more than encourage, you need to come to Sunset, sit down with Rick, so he can explain how the process works, how the program works, so that they're, because we're on the same team, and so they're going to be able to identify kids who may be a better fit at Sunset. And so we work closely with the other sites on getting kids to Sunset if they need to be there. So definitely a team effort district-wide, and so we appreciate everybody's support. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we have two public speakers here, or two speaker slips for public comment here, I should say. And the first is Raquel Madden. So if you would please come to the podium.
Good evening, board members. Thanks for allowing me time to speak. At CSBA, most of you know, we believe in investing in education to prepare our students for the 21st century, and also to prepare them for the responsibilities they will have in this democratic society. And today, I'm introducing to you CSBA's new approach by placing public affairs and community engagement reps regionally throughout our state. We call them PACERs for short. And I am the new PACER for San Diego and Imperial County. There's currently four PACERs that we've selected for the state, and luckily San Diego got the first one. And then we have two more in Los Angeles and one more in Sacramento County. Right now we have postings for another five, San Bernardino, Orange County, North LA, and the Bay Area, and another area in Sacramento as well. And with all of us here and with all the board members in San Diego County, we want to make sure we help prepare the organization at a local level. Usually we remember everything happens in Sacramento, but we want to make sure we prepare everybody at the local level. And that's what I'm here for, to be that resource to you. And together we want to help prepare the organization to establish a robust grassroots system to mobilize members and maximize our political capital. And one thing that people don't always realize, and especially at the legislative level, is that you are elected officials. You have a constituency that you're representing, and you have students that you're representing. And often they don't realize that that includes their constituency as well. And we want to make sure we make that point across to legislators. We also want to drive the education policy agenda to ensure high quality education for every student by addressing the adequacy and opportunity gaps. We want to provide more in-depth advocacy, policy, community engagement, and governance training for individual board members, and guarantee more frequent contact with CSBA staff locally. On updates and on the policies that are changing, anything legal that may be going on, or political developments that are happening in specific communities. and also build powerful coalitions regionally and statewide. That can be my goal and my focus. As we begin 2018, PACERS in the state are now focusing on encouraging school boards to adopt the full and fair funding resolution that CSB has passed around. We hopefully will get the school boards in our region to submit the resolution so that we can prepare for our Legislative Action Day on March 13th and present the resolution to the governor's office as well as to our local legislators. You brought up a good point today. The superintendent talked about the funding and the governor's budget. And sometimes legislators and the governor don't realize that funding the local control funding formula fully isn't a ceiling. It should be where we start. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things we're trying to get across to them. And so we're encouraging board members to sign up for Legislative Action Day. If you haven't so already, I have information for you I can pass around. I'm going to go ahead and leave you with my cards. I used to be a school board member. I served on the school board for 8 years. I believe
that's right.
And I used to also be a legislative staffer for 12 years. So I do have the experience to help you connect the two together and help you in any form that I can. So I'll leave my cards with you here. And
that'd be great.
So how did you get from where you were? Remember, we were together.
Yes.
I know. And so how did this, what was the impetus of this?
So I was working, while I was a school board member, I was also working for a legislator. At the time, he was a council member, and I followed him along to the Senate. And then this position opened up with CSBA, and I saw the opportunity there. My passion's always been education.
I know.
I was always focusing on other policy areas in this mm-hmm. legislative office, but I wanted to focus solely on education and the opportunity opened up, and that's how I ended up with CSBA.
Oh, that's good. You're the perfect person for that.
Thank you so
You're
much. We did Masters in Governance together,
yeah,
didn't we?
Did.
Yes.
And you were on fire back then.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you for coming this
thank you.
Evening.
Thanks
and,
for coming.
I believe she's going to try and get some routines going where
yes,
she'll either
so
get by us or contact us.
I'd like to meet with you individually if I can as well.
Hear more in the future. Thank you. Let's see. I also have, excuse me, is it Lin Tong Lee?
Good evening. My name is Lin Tong Lee. I'm a parent of the school district. So I have two boys from our school district. One just graduated last year from Four Pines. And my younger one is eighth grader at Pacific Trail Middle School. So I'm here to talk about the issue about offering Chinese language class mm-hmm. in CCA. If you remember, we together with a lot of many students and parents, mm-hmm. We came to the board meeting last May and talk about this issue. And I know it's been more than half a year now. If you remember, we have collected more than 1,000 signatures from the supporting parents at that time. And we also did a brief survey from CCA, PMS, and CVMS students. And we got 150 response who are interested in taking Chinese language class at CCA. And most of them are from the 7th, 8th grader, and 9th graders of these three schools. So we believe that there's a significant interest and need for students to have a Chinese language course at CCA. And I think after meeting, I think the school district acknowledged the interest has increased to a level that, you know, it's time to consider expanding the Chinese course, and also agreed that, you know, they would consider it for the 2018 and 2019 school year. We really are grateful. We are really grateful for the effort the school district has put in this matter. And I'm here tonight, just to reiterate this issue to the board. And there's still a very significant need. And we understand there are many strategic issues when we adding new courses. But we believe our school district will put the need and interest of our students as their top priority. So I do hope, we look forward to a positive results that really benefit our students. Again, as parents, we would like to provide, we'll be happy to provide all the necessary support as needed, including identifying potential, qualified candidates.
Mm-hmm.
To my knowledge, there are already several credentialed candidates who showed interest in such a position. So even before we made, large announcement among the community, so I'm sure, this has been a hurdle for the school district, but I'm sure this can be solved with our help. So we do look forward, we appreciate the school district, the effort, and we look forward to working together with the school district.
Thanks for coming. Thank you for bringing that back to us.
Yes. I think I can have Dr. Grove comment on that because he has been having direct conversations with yes. Mr. Colleen for the next school year. So if you just want to.
So as mentioned last spring, we kind of said, all right, so let's have the conversation. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of factors. And you know, we've had conversations with Ms. Lee and a few other parents who've been really good partners and leaders in the community on this. Been having discussions with the World Language Department and administration and counseling at CCA through the fall. I'm actually there tomorrow morning meeting with them again, trying to kind of wrap up those discussions because we have course offering season coming up soon. And I think everyone acknowledges that there is demand among the community, or at least initially perceived demand. Also having conversations at Torrey Pines because over the last 3 years, the enrollment in the Chinese classes at Torrey Pines has declined steadily to the point where we're having to make decisions as to whether we're going to be able to continue offering it at Torrey Pines because enrollment has gotten so low. So we're kind of having conversations at both schools and what are the implications if it dies at Torrey Pines and only is offered at CCA. So there's number of kind of conversations that are going on, but as I've shared with Ms. Lee and with you last spring, I think there is demand in the southern half of the community. We've mm-hmm. offered it at LCC for years, but never had enough kids sign up for it, and we will continue to offer it at LCC, but unless something significantly changes up there, you know, it probably will not run as a class. So I'm hoping that by tomorrow morning, by around 11, I'll have some resolution, and I have been in communication with Ms. Lee, and as I mentioned, one or two other parents who have been kind of good liaisons for us with the community, and I will follow up with them after that.
Good. Thank you.
I really want to thank Dr. Grove for his response. You know, yeah, so I'm a little bit surprised, though, to hear that the enrollment in Torrey Pines Chinese class is decreasing. So when my older son was in at Torrey Pines, he attended the AP Chinese class there. I think it's a well-attended class. So I'm not sure, you know, what's the reason exactly behind, you know, the decreasing. But, you know, based on the survey we did last year, last May, you know, there are, you know, at least 150, you know, respondents that were interested in taking Chinese language course at CCA. And we know a lot of them taking them off campus, you know, which is extra burden for them. If you remember last May, you know, many students also came, right? Mm-hmm. They talk about their desire, their passion to learn right. Chinese language, yeah, and how, you know, they can use that, yeah.
There's a question. Them. Your emails, can you give them to Dr. Grove? Because then it would
yes,
be easier
I
for
had
you.
A few
then you can have
had actually.
Both mm-hmm. demand and the class, and then you can really find out how many people really want
yeah,
to.
Yeah, and we've been in communication.
But I mean,
right,
a mass
right.
email blast, you could do it once, and then they could come back, as opposed to maybe you're not reaching everyone that maybe.
Well, I think they do it through the registration.
We do it through the registration
and
for
I
the
meant
students.
This specifically.
Right.
Her group just keep them abreast of what's going
yeah.
on.
Yeah,
okay.
yeah. So we just realized there's this board meeting tonight. So many parents won't come, but already have other arrangements and cannot make it. Yeah. So
okay.
Just,
yeah. Well, thank,
right,
you.
Thank you.
And that brings us
enrollment issue. A lot of students will express interest in taking a course, and then recognize that they have to take that course or this course. And so I think that is, and we find that not with just language courses, but you know, they have a finite number of courses that they can take. And so either I can take this AP course or I can take Chinese off campus and fit another course in. So that tends to be, you know, one of the deciding factors where, you know, and with any sort of thing we survey, would you be interested in taking? Yes, I'd be interested in taking, but it doesn't factor into that binary choice of I can't take this. So that's where the registration process is really, really relevant, because you can only choose these classes. So.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
And that brings us to our consent agenda items. And what I need at this moment is a motion to approve the items 11 through 15K, with the exception of 11A and 11B, which have been pulled.
So moved.
Yeah, second.
Second.
All right. All in favor.
Aye.
It's a roll call.
Excuse
roll call.
Me, sorry. Thank you.
Scott Geyer.
Yes.
Isaac Gelman.
Yes.
Jack Hargis.
Yes.
Ms. Herman.
Yes.
Mr. Salazar.
Yes.
Ms. Mirror.
Yes.
Ms. Hergesheimer.
Yes. All right, and Wendy Gum, if you would come, please, to the podium to speak on item 11A.
Happy New Year. my name is Wendy Gum. I'm a taxpayer and I have a student at Torrey Pines who's graduating in 5 months, and we do know colleges, so we are very excited. He's very excited to be moving on. So anyway, so with item 11A, so since July 13, 2017, the gift logs show that Torrey Pines High School Foundation has donated $81,049.37. However, on the Torrey Pines High School Foundation website, the fundometer shows $211,750 has been raised to date. So my question is because you'll notice on the gift logs tonight, there's no Torrey Pines Foundation donations at all recognized, which is pretty common on most of the gift logs. So my question is how is the $211,750 being dispersed to the school? And this is just the education fund tracking. So then what about the sports program fundraising and tracking? Because fundraising for the sports programs are still going on. For example, in June of 2016, the foundation reported $398,944 in funds were provided to the Torrey Pines High School football program. There is not one gift log that shows that amount for the football program. $268,999 in funds was presented to the basketball program. There is not one log that shows any money for the basketball program. Similar amounts are shown in previous years to both of these sports as well as other sports, yet these amounts are never shown in the gift logs. Every donation needs to be transparent and needs to be accepted by the school board. I've been talking about this for the last year, and I'm going to continue to talk about it until we see it on the gift logs. Where's the football donations for this school year? Why are they not in any of the logs? To this avail, chatter in the community is that the baseball coaches at Torrey Pines High School are now telling players and parents that they are not allowed to fundraise in the spring season, so if they want to pay something to the baseball program, they need to pay now before baseball season starts in the spring. Why are these conversations happening in the community? What is wrong with transparent fundraising in the spring season for sports? Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so you know, the item before you are the gifts that have been documented and you know, for approval tonight. You know, with respect to the other comments that have been made, you know, as we've mentioned, often the foundations will cover their own costs for things that they've received money for, so it's not a pass-through directly through the district. What you typically see on the donation report that goes to the board are those things where we've actually received revenue from the foundation rather than those gifts in kind. And so, you know, that is something that we can have conversations with them about, reporting the in kind where they're covering the cost directly rather than passing it through to us. And often there are many reasons why the foundations might do that, which I've discussed in the past. You know, in terms of being able to turn around and supply things with preferred vendors or faster than through our own purchasing department, which is why our foundations often, you know, will run things through their own accounts rather than donating the dollars to us to cover an expenditure.
All right. Shall we go ahead then and consider 11A, if I could have a motion to... let's see, accept the gifts and donations as shown in our supplements.
So moved.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you. And I guess we need a roll call on this one.
Scott Geyer.
Yes.
Isaac Gelman.
Yes.
Jack Hargis.
Yes.
Ms. Herrmann.
Yes.
Mr. Salazar.
Yes.
Ms. Muir.
Yes.
Ms. Hergesheim.
Yes. And Ms. Gump also has a speaker slip for item 11B. Step back up.
So I'm going to show you why 11A is bad. So... in previous meetings, Trustee Salazar has asked that the field trip request log include the cost of the trip. So we still don't see that. So how much do each of these trips on this log cost? Why is the field trip request form not included in the board packet? Because they have to be filled out before they're put onto this log. Who is responsible for organizing the trip, especially when hotel and airfare accommodations are needed? So let me share a story with you. In the summer, the football team went on a Hawaii trip. The field trip request indicated cost was $2,363 per player at 60 players. That is $141,780 for the trip. Someone hired a travel company, KSA, to sell travel packages for this trip. California has a lot of rules as it pertains to travel companies. On January 3rd, 2018, the California Department of Justice provided a letter stating that KSA Events is not a registered seller of travel and that their law enforcement unit will be looking into it further. I brought a copy of the letter for you. One, who is screening and protecting our students and families from predatory companies not licensed to do business in California? If the district foundations were better aligned, one of the foundations could hire an in-house travel agent licensed with the state, and with the amount of travel our students do between our four high schools, could fund one full-time person and use the balance as fundraising dollars to take the burden off of our families. Thank you.
Thank you.
We are working on getting the cost of the field trips. I know Ms. Douglas has been talking with within her staff on ways to capture that cost, and so we're still working on getting that added, but we don't have that information captured in our system to be able to put that on there.
But do we, if we find out that there's a company that maybe we should be using, do you put that out?
I've not had to do that. Certainly if we were informed of shady dealings, we could put that information out.
Okay.
But most of this travel tends to be more local, mm-hmm. and for individual competitions, for CIF events, the types of big events are that Ms. Gum refers to are more rare, and so these are more connected to local in California types of trips.
All right, I need a motion again then for approval of or accepting the field trips as shown in the attached supplements for 11B. Thank you. Do you have a second?
Second.
Thank you. Roll call again, please.
Scott Geyer.
Yes.
Isaac Gelman.
Yes.
Jack Hargis.
Yes.
Ms. Herman.
Yes.
Mr. Salazar.
Yes.
Ms. Muir.
Yes.
Ms. Hergesheimer.
Yes. Thank you. Item 16 is adoption of our proposed new and revised board policies, which there are three. These are in the business services area, and Ms. Douglas has brought them to us once.
These policies came forward last month for first read. They're aligning the policies with CSBA guidelines. Just to specifically mention again, in terms of 7214 for the GO bonds, we did revise it for CSBA, but we also made sure that we kept the exclusion, the existing exclusion of CABs, the capital appreciation bonds, and limiting the term to 25 years as this board has wanted to do. So I just want to make sure that you guys are aware of that, but this is coming forward to you for adoption this evening.
All right, thank you. So if I could have a motion to, well, I guess let's get the motion on the table, to adopt the proposed new and revised board policies as shown in the attached supplements, and as follows. Can we do all three of these at once?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Board policy number 3554, other food sales, which is revised. Board policy number 7212, Mellow Roost districts, which is new. Board policy number 7214, general obligation bonds, which is revised.
I could have a motion.
Thank you.
Second.
Thank you. And
any other discussion?
Yes, any questions for Ms. Douglas? All right, then I will ask all those in favor to please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Hearing none, that carries. Item 17 is adoption of our proposed new and revised board policies for educational services, coming from Dr. Grove.
Brought these to you in December for first reading here tonight for adoption, and they are primarily just some language changes around graduation requirement, changing the math course requirements from Algebra 1 to Integrated Math 1, changing the name of tests from CST testing to SBAC testing, just updating language primarily and aligning with a couple of new regulations at the state level.
Okay. So if I could have a motion to adopt these new and revised board policies, including, let's see, this is board policy number 5127, graduation ceremony and activities, board policy 6146.1, high school graduation requirements, and board policy 6146.11, alternative credits toward graduation. These are all revised.
I could have a motion.
Move approval.
Thank you. Can I get a second, please?
Second.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That carries. Thank you. Item 18 is adoption of resolution 2016-17, report on statutory school fees and findings. And this comes from Ms. Douglas also.
So this came forward to the board last month as well. And so this being brought forward is our annual report that we're required to present to you. It was made public for any public comments. We received no public comments on it. So it's coming forward to you this evening to adopt the resolution.
Thank you. So I need a motion to adopt the resolution regarding statutory school fees and report for fiscal year 2016-17 and the findings in compliance with government code section 66006 and 66001 as shown in the attached supplements.
Move approval.
Second.
Thank you. And this is a roll call, please.
Scott Geyer.
Yes.
Isaac Gelman. Jackson. Yes.
Sorry.
Ms. Herman.
Yes.
Mr. Salazar.
Yes.
Ms. Muir.
Yes.
Ms. Hergesheimer.
Yes. Thank you. 19 is acceptance of our 2016-17 annual audit, and we're returning to Ms. Douglas a few more times yet.
So this is our annual audit report. If you recall, I guess it was in December as well, we brought forward the unaudited actuals for approval. Maybe it was earlier than that. It was earlier than that. So this is where our external auditors come in. They, for lack of a better word, check, if you will, all of our revenue and expenditures. This report has no findings, which is an attestation to the fiscal services and Ms. Purley with the work that they do. Our total combined expenditures for last year across all funds is approximately $120 million. And what this report basically shows is that we have proper internal controls in place, that things are being recorded correctly according to our California School Accounting Manual. And so Ms. Purley is here tonight if there are any questions in relation to the audit.
All right, thank you. Why don't I get a motion, and then if we have any questions, we can do that. So I need a motion to accept the 2016-17 annual audit of the San Diego Union High School District as prepared by Wilkinson, Hadley, King & Company, as shown in the supplement.
Move to accept.
Thank you.
Second.
Thank you. Do we have any other questions for Ms. Douglas or Ms. Purley? I think I sent in a few questions to and got them answered, but thank you. Then I will, let's see, make sure I don't. We just need to ask all in favor. Aye, please.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That carries. And item 20 is the adoption of the resolution for the U.S. Bancorp Government Lease and Finance. Financing lease purchase of 6 school buses. You're still on.
Surprise. So we've had a couple of conversations, or I brought forward a couple of pieces of information in the sense of transportation and our aging fleet, and have said that this was coming forward. So this, in essence, is our lease purchase agreement allowing us to finance the purchase of 6 buses. So there are 2 larger buses that help us with an infrastructure problem in terms of the CNG that we have. We have a hard time with providing the fuel that's necessary for those buses. And then we also are purchasing 4 smaller vehicles that will help with special ed transportation. And so this is being brought forward to you this evening to allow us to enter into that agreement. Money has already been budgeted, and this doing a lease purchase this way enables us to kind of even out the payments over the course of a certain amount of time, as opposed to coming up with the money all up front in a 1-year period. So it basically just kind of helps us ease the pain so we can replace the vehicles that are necessary to replace.
Are we, the vehicles that we're replacing, are we going to make any remuneration on that or no?
Yes, the hope is that we will. And so because we will still have the buses, we're purchasing them. So the ones that we have the infrastructure issue on, our plan is to try and sell them. There is, from what I understand from Mr. Love, who's done some homework, is there is a want, if you will, or still a need, if you will, up in the LA area. So that would be our hope to be able to do that.
Yeah, that'd be good. How many were we talking about selling?
There's four, right?
I think it's five.
Five? Yeah. Okay, there's five, I think, that we have that we will be doing that.
Yeah, so it's five big buses that are currently compressed natural mm-hmm. gas. Mm-hmm. We're replacing two of them, but we
Correct.
Would sell all five of them
Correct.
And get off of CNG.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, then I need a motion to adopt the resolution authorizing a master tax-exempt lease purchase agreement with U.S. Bancorp Government Leasing.
Move approval.
Thank you.
Second.
Thank you. And this is any other questions? Or otherwise, we could have a roll call, please.
Scott Gaia.
Yes.
Isaac Gelman.
Yes.
Jack Hargis.
Yes.
Ms. Herman.
Yes.
Mr. Salazar.
Yes.
Ms. Muir.
Mm-hmm.
Ms. Ferguson.
Yes. Next is an adoption of a resolution to authorize the resolution to authorize the purchase of the school buses, correct? It was financing, and now this is authorizing the actual purchase.
Okay.
So I don't know if we need more presented or if we just need to get it on the table.
Well, this isn't necessarily authorizing the purchase, but it's authorizing the use of us to use this co-op bid, of which the South County Support Services Agency did go out to bid to contain up to competitive prices, and this would be allowing us to use that to purchase the vehicles. Yes.
So it's assuming that we find that is our best
Correct.
Deal we go with.
Correct.
That we are allowing that. All right. If I could have a motion to adopt this resolution.
With approval.
Thank you. This is also a roll call, please.
Scott Geyer.
Yes.
Isaac Gelman.
Yes.
Jack Hargis.
Yes.
Ms. Herman.
Yes.
Mr. Salazar.
Yes.
Ms. Muir.
Yes.
Ms. Hergesheimer.
Yes. All right. We will let Ms. Douglas have a break.
This is her item,
too.
Yeah,
I wrote the wrong name on it.
I wrote the wrong name next to your cheat sheet.
All right. You got them backwards. That's what we're doing.
Yes. That's what happened.
Thank you. So this is a public hearing and adoption of a resolution with Community Facilities District 95-2 annexation, and I actually need to gobble us into a separate meeting here. Public hearing.
And there are no public comments.
Okay. So.
You can close the hearing.
I can close the hearing. Yep, I have to follow my notes here. And I need a motion to adopt the resolution for us to act as the legislative body for this facilities district.
So moved.
Second.
Thank you. And this is also a roll call, please.
Scott Geyer.
Yes.
Isaac Gelman.
Yes.
Jack Hargis.
Yes.
Ms. Herman.
Yes.
Mr. Salazar.
Yes.
Ms. Muir.
Yes.
Ms. Hergesheimer.
Yes.
Okay. I think you already did that.
Oh, gavel this out? Already, thank you. I wrote it, so I did it.
Okay. I was wondering what I said.
Order, please. Yes.
Order.
All right, so now, Superintendent Dill, we are going to be discussing approval of the amendment to employment contracts for our associate superintendents of education services and administrative services.
Thank you. So it's been the practice in the district, I'm going to move this up again, I'm sorry if I'm deafening you folks in the back. It's been the practice in this district for many years that the superintendent recommends an extension of the associate superintendent contract so that there's a continual four-year agreement in place for the senior leadership team. Last year, with the transition between Superintendent Schmidt and my term, first as interim, Mr. Miller was in his first year, Mrs. Norton was in her last year, and technically we didn't have an Associate Superintendent of Business Services. So I spoke with Dr. Grove and said, can we just put this on hold for 1 year? And he was fine with that. It's going to be my recommendation that we resume this practice, first with Dr. Grove and Mr. Miller, and then with Ms. Frazee and Ms. Douglas in their first year. You know, we'll get them on the same cycle next year, and we would bring a recommendation forward next year for all four associate superintendents to be on the same four-year cycle, which was the practice when I used to sit at that table. The reason we do this is, one, we want to recognize the outstanding work that our senior management team does and the work that they do, but we also want to promote the stability of our senior leadership team. We want to ensure that we have continuity and that our executive cabinet are thinking long-term. And one way to do that is to assure them that we are investing in them long-term as well. We've heard a few things already tonight as Dr. Grove talked about the transition and possibly adding Chinese and to another program. Those are talks that don't just happen. They take some time and they take some planning and some effort. And by having folks in place for a number of years, our school site management understands that these are folks that are our leaders for the long haul, and you utilize them as a resource, and it allows them to be invested in our schools. When you look at the work that these two gentlemen do, they are well respected not only throughout the county but the state. And as I network with other superintendents, not just down here in San Diego, but throughout the state, their names are known. And I often have people say, oh, you work with Mark Miller, or you work with Mike Grove, I know him very well, and they're always very complimentary. So, you know, one of the ways that we attract talent is through that stability of keeping the long-term contracts. Their jobs are a lot bigger and a lot broader than they were a few years ago. There are changes in the state standards. There's the creation of the LCAP. There's a new accountability model. There's new standardized testing. We've just cleaned up some policies that while it only looks like a change of words, it was a lot of work that went behind going from old models to new models. A greater focus on student supports, as you heard Mr. Ayala talking about school connectedness and LCAP Priority 4. So let me go through some of the areas that these two oversee. So with Dr. Grove, who is in charge of our instructional leadership, there's the state standards, which included the transition to the Common Core state standards a few years ago, and now we're in the midst of the Next Generation Science Standards, as you heard from Ms. Dolnick a few meetings ago. English learner development, the curricular program development, the professional development for all of our teachers and administrators as we transition to new standards. He's in charge of the professional learning communities, our teachers on special assignment who are supplementing the professional development with our teachers. He's oversees the department leadership for all of the academic departments within the schools. Textbooks, instructional materials, grade challenges, academic integrity and compliance, our coordinating council. He articulates curriculum with our elementary school district, so he's our liaison with the elementary districts as they work to raise their standards up so that it's a smooth transition at seventh grade. He oversees our WASC accreditation with our school sites. The local, and then last but not least, well, he supervises our high school principals and assistant principals. And then last but not least, the local control accountability plan, which you've seen all of the work that goes into the LCAP each year, and something that didn't exist just a few years ago. With Mr. Miller, a short way to say it is everything else, because it is a lot of things, and it's a lot of varied things that Mr. Miller oversees. And while much of the focus in the last year has been on special education, which is just one aspect of what Mr. Miller oversees, so there is our formal assessment and administration of the CASP test, our college testing, physical fitness testing, the California Healthy Kids Survey, the leadership in our student wellness area, so special education, Section 504, our counseling and guidance program, which are all part of the multi-tiered systems of support for our students. He oversees the Learning Commons, so our what we used to call libraries. You heard Mr. Ayala earlier talk about alternative education and credit recovery. Mr. Ayala reports, he's the one high school principal that reports to Mr. Miller. So all of the things that Mr. Ayala does, whether it's credit recovery, alternative education, athletics, independent study, PE. Ready, I think, is also within Mr. Isla, but also is directly supervised by Mr. Miller. Our online health program, interdistrict transfers, let's see, I mentioned athletics, home hospital instruction, our health services, our social worker programs, and let's see, he's taking over high school selection this year. Oh, no, still with Mike? Okay, I thought you might not. That's a good move because Dr. Grove has been doing that for many years. I thought we had moved that over to you. So, you know, many, many other things, AVID, TUPE, and also our student information system. So all of the data that we report to the state and federal government about every facet of our students is led by Mr. Miller. So I've talked a lot, but suffice to say, we could not do what we do without these two gentlemen right here and all of the varied areas that they provide direction and leadership to our principals and to our directors throughout the district in overseeing many, many programs that benefit our students, either through their wellness or through academics, athletics, arts, and all of the other things that you heard these students talk about today. All of that comes through their leadership, and I could not do my job if it weren't for these two gentlemen doing theirs. And so I'm going to ask that you renew their contracts and so that we provide that four-year stability. And really, the way that it's written, it's 3.5. We're at mid-year on this, so it's essentially adding 1 year to Mr. Miller's contract and I think 1.5 years to Dr. Grove. And I'm happy to take any questions or comments on that.
And move approval of that, and we have discussion if we need to. Is that
I think we have to do each of them individually.
Okay.
Yes.
So first, it would be the employment contract for Michael Grove, Associate Superintendent of Educational Services.
Okay, move approval of that contract.
All right. We have a second.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm just going to say, again, I'm going to vote no on this. I've voted no for many, many years. I don't believe public employees should have contracts. I think if and when we get a new superintendent, that person should have the flexibility of hiring his or her own staff. So I will be voting no.
I feel that we have a superintendent, and this is his vote of confidence, and he's given very good rationale for Ms. Dr. Grove and also Mr. Miller, and I think it's important that our employees do have the confidence of the contract so that they know that it provides stability for the district, but it provides stability for them as well in the vote of confidence. So
want to note that our principals and our assistant principals don't have contracts. So we are the only people who do are the people who work in this office. And while I wouldn't agree that the principal should either, I think the majority of people in the United States are at-will employees, and I think all of our employees should be that way. So I'll be voting no.
Okay. All right. Well, I would say I also feel that it's a matter of leadership positions. For me, it's important that, you know, if we're going to have a vision, if we're going to have programs, if we're going to have, I could think of others, even just with our special ed task force, you know, developing the trust and then to not know if you're going to be, now we're dealing with someone new again, that having this continuity is important.
You know, a revolving door would not help us. And if we were on individual one-year, school-year contracts, that's certainly what it could lead to.
Well, and it is one-sided, though. Mr. Schmidt had a four-year contract. Ken Noy, they quit.
Yeah,
so these people could do the same.
And I would say if they had no contract, you could almost assuredly, that because the other thing that I would say that we need to take into consideration is just the practice of our industry. Mm-hmm. And if we're the only district that's not offering long-term contracts, and every other district is. I know that, you know, when I sat at that table, I probably would have been looking at a district that would offer me long-term stability versus always wondering. And I worked in that Atwell environment too, Mr. Salazar, so I know what that's like when I was in private sector. So you know, just knowing that there are employers out there that are willing to offer that and to attract talent and lock them in, that's very valuable, and that's what I would be looking at if I was being self-interested. And you know, at some point, everybody is. Mm-hmm. And my self-interest right now is to make sure that I've got a strong and stable team that's respected by our leadership team, and that they understand that I'm invested in all four of these folks. We're focused on two of them, but all four of them, not only tonight but ongoing.
Any further questions or comments? Then I would like to call for a vote. Oh, wait, we have the motion. Yes, we do.
Yeah.
All in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
Opposed.
Okay, that carries. Thank you. Brings us to item B, which is for Mr. Miller's Associate Superintendent of Administrative Services contract.
I would move to approve that contract as well.
Thank you. And may I have a second?
Second.
Thank you. Any other questions or discussions? Or
no.
All right, then I will call the question. All in favor of approving this contract, indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
Opposed.
All right, thank you. That carries. Bringing us to the adoption of our revised board policy number 4341. Point one, excuse me, and that's from Ms. Frizzi regarding classification salary allocation for one of our positions.
Yes, so the position of Director of Purchasing and Risk Management, it was determined that we would be reassigning the duties of the risk management component of that position to another person. So as a result of that, the commission went ahead and created a position called the Director of Purchasing. And with those duties removed, it was determined that we would be placing that particular job on a different level of the management salary schedule. So this is an amendment to that salary schedule that adds that particular position on that particular level.
Okay. Can I have a motion to adopt this revised board policy number 4341.1 with the management salary schedule? Thank
Second.
You. Thank you. All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. And that brings us to information items. We have some new proposed revised board policies. Not new, but brought to us for the first time, I guess I should say. Thank you.
So with changes in the Ed Code and changes with law, we are in the process of updating our board policy. So board policy 5111, admission requirements, updates language to include information around pupils of departed parents and transfer military dependents and them verifying residency, as well as takes away the personal belief exemption for immunizations per Ed Code. Board Policy 5123 around promotion and retention, update promotion and retention policies to eliminate and update criteria for retention that are now obsolete, which includes the high school exit exam, which was officially eliminated on January 1st. Updates the CST, which is now the CASP. In the document that you have tonight, you will notice, though, that there is one reference for the high school exit exam. We wanted to get out in front of this, and so because it was just eliminated on January 1st, when you see it next time, we're going to strike that out. So there is one reference, but we just wanted to get out in front of this. Board Policy 6179 around supplemental instruction, again, eliminates language around offering intervention courses for students who have not passed the California High School Exit Exam, as it is now eliminated. The board policy will ensure the district will continue to provide remediation and intervention courses for students who are falling behind. So those are the board policies.
All right. Thank you. And then we have our uniform complaint quarterly report for the second quarter brought by Dr. Grove.
So I've heard you say this many times.
Many times.
Do a quarterly report of any uniform complaints that we have received related to the Williams settlement, which is instructional materials and teacher vacancies, things like that. And for this quarter, we received no complaints.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Item 27, we have one speaker slip from Wendy Gump. This is regarding our video broadcasting conversation.
I just wanted to let you know that I think actions taken by the board are official, and because school board members have a lot more power, I think, than a lot of people realize, because there's no authority above you for anybody to go to complain. You're like the judge, jury, and executioner for anything related to the school district. I think it's important that your meetings are videotaped, mainly because I think if you watch the way you speak to the public sometimes, you might adjust your behaviors. I also think that we're a high-performing district, so we should be setting the example of what high-performing districts look like. So our school board should be high-performing, and it should be visible. A couple of examples of districts that actually use video. Grossmont Union High School District uses video, so their school board meetings are videoed. Poway videos their school board meetings. San Diego Unified. I hear a lot in our district, especially our principal at Torrey Pines likes to compare us to Palo Alto Unified School District on a regular basis. They also videotape their meetings. So I think if we want to say we're a high-performing district, we should take high-performing actions at our school board level, so we should be doing those types of things. We have some amazing audiovisual students at CCA and Torrey Pines in particular. I'm sure they could set up a program that actually puts a podcast or webinar so that the meetings can be broadcast on computer once a month, 12 times a year. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. So Ms. Gum has taken a couple of my talking points from me, but that's okay. As the district knows, we currently post copies of our board agendas and minutes on our website, and that's in accordance with the Brown Act. The requirement is that we keep and maintain those written records to document the actions of the board. We have used audio recordings for many years to capture the comments and actions of the board meetings, and interestingly, when I first started at the district, it was done by cassette tape, and they would tape over them. Once the board had approved minutes, they would keep them for about 60 days, and then they would just either erase them or tape over them. Since the digital age, we've actually maintained and archived those. And beginning this school year, we started posting the audio of our meetings on our website. So right alongside the board agendas now, in the minutes section, we have been posting the audio. So people can go back and review the audio portion of these meetings. There is currently no requirement to permanently maintain or post those audio requirements, and there's no requirement to permanently maintain any video or record by use of video. As Ms. Gum points out, there are a few districts in the county who do that. So on audio, of the 42 districts plus the County Office of Ed, so out of 43 of us in the county, seven districts post audio. So we're one of them, so six other districts post their audio. And then it's four districts in the County Office of Education post the video of their meetings on their websites. I would say of those five, four of them are larger districts than us, you know, two to three or 10 times our size, and only one of them is a smaller district than ours. So we currently don't have the professional equipment installed in the boardroom to video record or broadcast that. So if the board were to ask me to investigate this, you know, we would have to look at the technical requirements of broadcasting those. I've seen other public agencies that do this, and they do it in a variety of ways. Some of them integrate it with their presentation screen, so it flips back and forth. It does close-ups on each of the board members plus the public speakers, and so you've got somebody who's switching those cameras and operating that and switching back and forth between a presentation screen and integrating it with the board agenda. So there's a way to do that. There's a cost associated with that. Others put one webcam at the back of the room, and unless somebody's very effusive in the way they talk, you can't even tell whose mouth is moving because it has to be so far, or a fish, you know, eye lens. You really can't even tell who's making a comment on that, and it's usually pretty grainy and not that great. So, you know, there's there's the option of, you know, not doing it or doing it in a kind of haphazard, sloppy way or doing it in a very professional way. I know in looking at the county office where I've been in their boardroom many times, they have what I would refer to as a command center in their boardroom, and it's a big area, probably about 6x6, maybe 8x8 of equipment that's around that operator as he's doing that. And so, you know, you have a technician who would do that. And we would also have to investigate the work rules on who could actually do that. So while, you know, we do have students who are very fluent with technology, we also have rules around who can actually perform work for a school district and whether you can actually use unpaid workers and others. And so,
why do you think Poway and Grossmont and others do it?
You know, I don't know because I haven't asked them why they do it.
Do you think there's a downside to doing it? Do you think people wouldn't be interested or they shouldn't have the ability to see the board meeting?
You know,
do you think that would be a bad thing?
No, I've only spoken with one superintendent who said that you know, his belief was that, you know, nobody was watching, and this is in confidence, so I'm not going to reveal which superintendent I was speaking with, but was lamenting the cost of the streaming service and the technical staff that they have to employ. In that particular district, it was $32,000 a year just for the actually streaming their monthly board meetings. So that was the web hosting, the streaming service, broadcasting on local cable access, plus the technical staff who was there to operate all of the equipment. So that didn't include the investment in the infrastructure to wire their boardroom, and that I think all happened before he had been superintendent, so he didn't know how much they had spent to do a multi-camera system with professionally integrated with their system. So, you know, I don't think that there's a downside. You know, we open our doors every month. We post our agenda. We invite people to come in. The only downsides I see are, you know, allocating resources towards investment in this room rather than a classroom, and how many folks would actually tune in for that investment. How much bang would we get for the buck for that? And you know, there are this particular superintendent also mentioned that that he has noticed that, you know, some people are reluctant to come to their meetings because they don't want to be seen, and so they know that if there's shots of the audience, that even if they weren't the ones who were speaking for or against a controversial issue, that they didn't want to be seen by their friends and neighbors that they were there, and so they actually, you know, were staying away from the meetings. And so there's that as well. And you know, all of this is anecdotal, and I'll admit that. And it's one superintendent's opinion on their experience.
We're filmed all the time, no matter where we go and what we do. I think it's a very good thing to do. I think $32,000 is a very small amount. I think the public has a right to see these meetings. Everybody doesn't have access, can't come. I think this is a high-functioning district, and this is something that we should have. And I think it's not good government if we don't do it. And so I will highly urge my fellow board members to encourage at least going to the next step. The very next step would be find out what this would cost exactly and how we would do it. I don't know why we would have to broadcast about cable access when there's YouTube out there or whatever. And also, I would be surprised why the expense is so high. I have, anecdotally, a daughter who works in broadcasting in Los Angeles, and they film many, many things on iPhones, which are professionally broadcast. And so I would be surprised it would really be even that much. But again, maybe it has to be because we're government. But I think we should do it.
So how much is it to put it on? So we do the audio. How much is that?
So for the audio, we have this audio recorder here, and it's just a matter of posting it on our website. And so, you know, that essentially costs us nothing to do that.
So I think the whole thing about having the film or use of the video, that seems like that would be just one step above that, not much more of an expense.
Well, but if we're going to go to the trouble, I think that, first of all, I think the audio does provide a lot, and it still gives anonymity for someone that does want to come to the meeting and participate in it.
You think they deserve anonymity?
to come and sit in our audience and listen? Why? I mean, why?
Well, why would we even film the audience? We'd film speakers and we would film us.
It's very possible that would happen, but I feel that we're providing what's happened through the audio, our voices, which is what's important, and I don't see that it's necessary.
In this day and age, nobody is going to listen to that, where they can see it and they can fast forward to the parts that they want to. It's very awkward and very difficult to listen to those audios.
And I would say if it were just an iPhone video, and mm-hmm. I'll say that I've seen in the last year people with their iPhones pointing it at us. I haven't actually watched any of those videos, but I've seen people doing that, that would be very similar to something like this. What you do see with those large districts who are doing this, it is a very professional production, mm-hmm. and it does integrate with their board agenda. And as I mentioned, also any presentations that are on the screen, they get flipped over so that somebody who's viewing it will also see it. It's very advanced telecommunication technology, or technology. But the other interesting thing is, I don't know if anybody tried to watch the governor's press conference last week for his budget, and that is something that I do every year. And here the state of California has its own channel. They have paid staff. And the press conference was a disaster, and not just our district as we were trying to watch it, but folks that I reached out to in other districts, they couldn't watch it because the audio just kept, or the whole video kept crashing. And I'm thinking, if the state of California can't get this right, how much are we going to have to invest to have
a better job?
Well, I'm saying they have a lot of resources. They have a lot more resources than we do.
I think you made the argument for it. You wanted to watch it. You think you should have the ability to watch it. And we spend over $100 million a year here. So it's not like this is penny-ante stuff. And I think what Mrs. Gumbs said is reasonable. We're the judge, jury, and executioner on many, many things. And I think the public, even though it's five people, should have the right to be able to see it without having to get in their car and drive here, and they can see it the next day. Our meetings now go very late. Just make it accessible. I mean, this is hardly a radical concept here.
If we weren't doing anything at all, I would absolutely want to consider doing something. But from my perspective, the fact that we're already doing the audio, there's a printed agenda available, the backup documents are available. I personally don't want even to have our staff spending time investigating this. I'd rather have them working on current issues that are before them. And again, we've talked about occasions when what we consider something to be not a lot of money, and other people think it's a lot. This is one, I don't want to take anything from the classroom. And for me, the audio is available.
So. The only thing I agree with this is that the only thing I think about is we're supposed to be like this amazing district, which we are. As people talk at CCA, we've got plays going on, we've got this going on. The part I would like people to see is when we have the principals come speak, we've got amazing schools, and I feel we don't do enough advertising. I don't think they get to see what things are going on. And usually people come here and they'll say, I didn't know this was going on. I didn't know you were doing this. That's the part I would like to see. Is that I think when the principals speak and talk about, like when Rick was talking about Sunset, no one gets to really hear that. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the part that I feel it would be a good way for people to see there's more going on here.
But I think in terms of using that same phrase, the bang for your buck, that there might be a lot of other things we could do that would give us a lot more PR than waiting to see if somebody happens to listen
know if
or watch.
Really actually watch the whole meeting for that. I think when they would tune in would be if there was something more, mm-hmm.
Well, that
was
to the controversies.
But,
like
I mean, I agree. I think more promotion mm-hmm. of all of the great things that are happening in the district, and we're fortunate enough to get to hear that since we're at the meetings. But I think there are other ways to promote those types of things. So
I have a question. What do you think, Isaac?
This sounds kind of cheap to me. I think we should.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Scott?
I think we should have a tripod with a camera. It would be like a $100 investment, not $22,000. And then we take the $22,000 and allocate it somewhere. Like the LCC Theater.
I do have to admit, Mr. Golden. He would do amazing.
It's literally falling apart. It does. I think it sounds like a little bit excessive, but there's definitely like those meetings where it's really nice to be able to go and back and watch it, see people in the audience, you know, they want to record it for their own keeping, so that they can go back to it and remember what happened. not just I don't know, people.
Sarah Trigg's parents.
We don't read anymore.
So look at the year.
I think it's a minimal investment, and I think it's definitely useful for those meetings that are controversial, repeated. So.
I do think you're right about, I think there's a certain age group that still reads, but most people that are younger, it's all visual.
For sure.
Because you're used to seeing on their phone all the time, and they're not going to read it and maybe not visual them, but they will look at it if it's a broadcast.
Yeah, and we have issues in the Falconer that could definitely benefit from this, you know, so I'm not relaying something 1 month later. They can just go back and see exactly what happened, word for word.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I can task our director of information technology to, you know, survey the other districts, determine exactly what type of equipment and investment that they provided. I think it's more than $100 tripod and a camera in the middle. Because that will look no different than the folks with their iPhones out in the audience. And, you know, I'll say I've been on camera more than any more than I've ever been in my life in the last year. And so it's not that, you know, I'm afraid of being in front of a camera. And we all recognize, I think everybody up here realizes that everything they say is, you know, a public record and is being recorded and captured, and everybody's careful and measured with their comments. So I don't think that that's anything that anybody is worried that up here that they're going to change their behavior, you know, based off of, you know, having one other type of technology. It's really, you know, for me, it's the expenditure and what is the value and how many people will actually go back and utilize it.
But the only thing is, too, is I remember when I went through CCA with Kristen Gaspar, walking through, and we got, you know, the grants going forward on those computers that was for the TV show they have there. Mm-hmm. They said then they put it online and 3,000 people watch it a week. Mm-hmm. As you're talking about something that could grow, and I thought that was amazing.
Yeah.
And she said,
"There's your lot more entertaining."
Yeah, I watch CCTV.
CCTV's pretty fun.
Yeah, I watch it because it's fun.
People ask me all the time about what's going on in the school, like, "What happened? What did the kids say?" And you know, then I know I'm telling all my friends that this is what's going on. You know, and so I think it'd be important.
Okay. I think the public has a right to see the meeting, and it's a very small dollar amount. And well, I think this would.
I think
it's good government. It's a good thing to do. It's more access, not less access.
Well,
I'm really surprised that anybody would argue against it. I'm really surprised.
I'm just curious at the cost. And then the task, you know, the staff time. Because as much as and talented as our students are, I don't see that we should rely on them to do something like that. So more information.
Why don't you get more information? You can make a decision then.
Okay. Certainly. Okay.
All right. Well, thank you for the discussion. Let's see. Which brings us to business services update. Ms. Douglas, did you have anything else to share with us this evening?
Just to kind of piggyback a little bit on what Mr. Gill was referring to in reference to the governor's budget proposal. So now that the governor's budget has been released, again, it's very generic, but it begins the process of our budget development. So as we're looking at enrollment projections and things of that nature for our budget workshop upcoming, and even though we are getting more money up front, if you will, in the sense of it being fully funded in 18-19, then what that does for the two out years is just provide us with COLA on top of that. But no additional money, if you will, over that multi-year projection that we've been working on. And so, as you know from prior conversations, we still are looking at trying to kind of balance out, if you will, in the sense of when we're looking at that multi-year projection, because we still have some deficit spending that we're looking at trying to make more efficient with what we're doing with our budget. And we've had some conversations around that a little bit, too, as well. So we'll start beginning that process, and one of the things that we'd like to do is have some more conversations with principals, and we'll begin that, and as we come back to you next month for our budget study session, we'll hope to have some more information, but we don't anticipate there being a lot of new information. We do have new one-time dollars. We'll probably more so at the May revise is where we'll have some more solidity, if you will, around what the impact may be on federal and things of that nature. But we'll start that and hopefully have a little bit more information for you guys at the budget workshop next month.
So, is there any news about the cameras at Torrey Pines? The cameras at Torrey Pines? I know we have the parent.
Oh, that's
send us an email? Is that
so? Yes. So we. So the our director and our facilities department has been looking at costing out cameras and looking at options on what different cameras we have. And then we also have the finalization of our vulnerability report that we are finalizing. They're getting some just minor numbers in the sense that they're looking at ADA and enrollment and things of that nature. So that will be finalized this month. And then the hope is to come forward with some sort of recommendation. One of the things that we want to do is use that vulnerability report because we did have them come in and they identified areas of where cameras should be. So we want to take a look at that so that we're not just putting a camera in an area where maybe it was different and having that prioritized. So we'll have some more information and maybe we can bring some of that back too in the sense of the budget.
Yeah, either budget or facilities.
Okay.
Right.
So you'll get back to
this. As the board will recall, when we issued the Mello-Roos bonds last year, a portion of that was set aside for security enhancements. And so that's where we went and hired a professional to actually do an assessment of all of our school sites. So it wasn't just a, you know, a slip shot, let's throw a camera up here.
Right.
Because we think it's a good idea. We're actually having professionals who will be independent from any bidding or anything else that we're doing, so they're not interested in the outcome. It's just straightforward recommendations.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
In relation to security in general, so
yeah.
Not just around
right.
cameras, but around everything.
Could be fencing, could be, you know,
correct.
Any number
yes.
of things.
Okay. Thank you.
Right. Thank you. And Dr. Grove.
One quick update. As you know, we're in the midst of our transition to new state standards for science, which being part of the conversation, especially at the high school level, is around course sequencing. And so our work is looking at the new standards and then revising our courses to make sure that they are aligned to those standards. And one of the key changes in the new standards is that a college preparatory chemistry class that's just aligned to the state standards and doesn't go way beyond the state standards, it would cover significantly less content than our current chemistry class does. And our teachers and I believe that that is a good thing for most of our students. But it raises concern that if our college prep chemistry course is not going to cover as much content, that we have students who are leaving that course wanting to go on to AP chemistry, and that there could be a gap between what they need to be prepared walking in the door to AP chem. So that led to a discussion as part of our course sequence. Do we keep our college prep chem to be standards plus the extra stuff kids would need to be ready walking in the door of AP Chem, or do we keep our college prep chem purely aligned to the standards and then create an honors chemistry class that would be designed to prepare kids to go into AP Chem? Our chemistry teachers were very hesitant about starting to transition to the new standards without knowing the answer to that, because they didn't want to start pulling back on the content and not serve the hundreds of kids who are going on to AP Chem. So we engaged in some, we've been having conversations around that and got together with every chemistry teacher in our school district about two weeks ago. No, I guess it was right when we came back from break, so, and had a really good conversation. And it was unanimous among all of the chemistry teachers that they wanted our college prep chem class to be standards aligned, not standards plus a whole bunch of other stuff. It was also unanimous that they felt that the content in that class would not adequately prepare students to walk into an AP Chem class. And AP Chem is probably one of the most rigorous courses we offer, and there isn't a lot of wiggle room in the instructional year to add the additional things that would be eliminated from a college prep chem class. So their unanimous recommendation was that we should have an honors chemistry course. That would kind of be a, for lack of a better term, a pre-AP course. And our honors chem would be designed for kids who are planning to take AP Chem. Our college prep chem would be designed for kids who don't plan to take AP Chem. We are looking to pilot a new honors chemistry course next year at our high school level, and that would allow our college prep chem teachers to start to align the content as we make this gradual transition without the fear that we're going to have kids who aren't serving well as they move on. So I just wanted to kind of keep you informed as we continue these discussions about what the recommendations. So we will be piloting a new Honors Chem course next year, and I would anticipate that it will be part of the recommended course sequence that I plan to bring to you later in the spring. Just as to why is it chemistry only, as our teachers are looking at, say, bio and the standards for bio, they feel that a college prep bio class will prepare students to go into AP bio if they choose to do so, so they don't feel like they need a separate honors course at that level. And at the physics level, kids will choose between college prep physics and AP physics, because AP physics is a first-year physics course, AP Chem is a second-year Chem course, AP Bio is a second-year Bio course. So that's the rationale for why Honors Chem versus any of the other content areas.
Will all four of the high schools be piloting the Honors?
Three of them are all in on it. One of them is still having conversations about that, whether they fully believe we need it. It's just a matter of timing, whether they feel like they're ready to dive into that next year. They have to kind of meeting with that particular subgroup of chemistry teachers on Monday to kind of facilitate that discussion. And really, it can be a psych discussion. Mm-hmm. If they chose not to do it next year, I think it would be a one-year thing, and then following that, they would. Mm-hmm. If they choose not to pilot it and choose to, continue to draw back the college prep chem for next year, then the conversation is going to become, okay, so then what are we going to do for the students who do want to move to AP Chem to make sure that they are prepared and aren't at any disadvantage? Mm-hmm. And I think there's a variety of options on how to do that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I believe like in Vista that they do an Honors Chem now, but it wouldn't be to the new standards, I'm assuming, but they do that in a Chem, Honors Chem, AP kind of
You go back
options.
About a decade, we had Honors Biology and we had Honors Chem.
Yeah.
And what happened is, quite honestly, what happened when we got rid of the Honors courses was that the Honors content got moved down and became our college prep courses. Because teachers were afraid of not preparing kids to go into the AP courses. Right. And that has led, to be completely honest, to courses that are not, to college prep courses that are not accessible to many of our students who are college, four-year college bound.
And they just not need that level.
So that's why I really have been very insistent that our college prep courses are aligned to the state standards and not the state standards plus everything you need if you want to be a chemistry major in college.
Yeah. Great. I think that's a great move. I've heard from a lot of families that have been concerned about that, whose students aren't on that track, and they still need that chemistry or that science, and yet, their future plans don't include as many sciences. So sometimes they choose to take chemistry off campus, and that is not what we want to see families having to choose to do.
And it's an equity issue, because some families can afford to do that, others cannot. And it's fraught with a number of issues. And I think that what I can say is that meeting with our chemistry teachers, there was wholesale commitment to really making sure that our science curriculum is accessible for all of our students.
Yeah, I definitely know students that were chemistry off campus just as a tough class. Regular chemistry.
Right. Thank you.
Ms. Frazee, do you have a human resources update?
I really don't have anything this evening. I'm just happy to be here.
Happy New Year. Thank you. And Mr. Miller, Administrative Services.
Yeah, as board members Herman Tummer and Herman mentioned yesterday, we met at Carmel Valley Middle School for our Special Education Task Force. As they did mention, Ms. Burness circled the airport three times, tried to land, refueled in Ontario, and still made it there by 10:45.
Wow.
It was pretty impressive. We reviewed stakeholder survey results, but the majority of the day was truly spent around the group identifying priorities for the strategic plan. By the end of the day, the groups were actually starting to write the plan, and they were starting to write their big, overarching, long-term goals. I've been truly impressed. I mean, it's been an amazing team effort. truly proud of the contributions of our parents, our administrators, but especially our certificated staff. I cannot tell you that how grateful our parents are to have them in the room, because they've been a huge resource being able to talk about what's happening in our general education classrooms as well as our special education classrooms. And as Ms. Burness left yesterday, she said, wow, you have assembled a very talented group. And so I've been impressed with the teamwork, and so I'm looking forward to see what they produce.
Thank you. She also commented about their commitment to me, and I was impressed, stayed long enough to see them working through for that hour or so, and then reporting out from small groups, and you really, I felt like we could see the patterns, the areas of concerns taking shape, so I think they have a kind of an idea of foretaste of what we're going to get brought to us, but it sounds like we're on good track with them, so thank you. Future agenda items. Do we have anything that needs to be brought in the immediate future? If not, we do not need to return to closed session, so I am going to adjourn this meeting. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.